It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Governor Tony Evers' budget plan seeks a $2.6 billion increase for K-12 schools. The legislature's budget committee, Joint Finance, is now crafting its own plan for funding education. Be part of our conversation about state funding for schools. Call in with your question, your comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jill Underley is State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Superintendent Underley, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start with mental health. Reaction there, the legislature's budget committee rejecting the plan by Governor Evers to hike state funding for mental health programs in schools. What is your reaction to that decision?
It's really disheartening. When I talk to parents and when I talk to kids, but mostly parents, and I ask them what their number one concern is in our schools, they always say mental health. And that has been true this past year of the pandemic. It was true when I was a superintendent in the schools. So it's just really, it's too bad.
What will happen without this funding, cutting $276 million for mental health services in schools? What is the takeaway there?
Yeah, well, schools have been doing what they can, providing they provide counseling when they can. They provide this Band-Aid approach. They apply for competitive grants, which is really too bad also because the needs are so great that we unfortunately are required to have schools compete for money for mental health. So what we'll do is our school districts do what they always do, and they will, do their best to make sure that the needs are met. But kids are going to, kids unfortunately suffer.
Why should schools be providing mental health, addressing mental health concerns, rather than leaving those services to healthcare providers?
Well, the kids are in the schools, right? And when you think about any kind of healthcare, and you have to go someplace to get that healthcare, in a lot of communities, the child would have to miss school. Whereas if the services are provided in school, maybe they miss 20 minutes of a study hall, or they could, provide 20 minutes or half an hour or whatever during another class. And then you eliminate all that travel time. So there's really that out of time component. But the kids are in the school. We know the needs are there. And so the most logical and best way to serve kids is to reach them in the schools.
When you look more broadly at this issue, as students are struggling with mounting anxiety, mounting depression, other mental health struggles, are the current ratios of students, per social worker or per counselor, are they adequate across schools? What is your sense?
No, they're not adequate. Some schools are doing better. Some schools are, right on the money, but it's about one counselor or mental health professional for every 250 students is what the recommendation is. But when you think about what counselors do, school counselors, especially in high school, it's not just mental health, it's, scholarships, it's jobs, it's all those other pieces, to prepare students for life after high school. But, our youth risk behavior survey data showed that we have Wisconsin students who are dealing with mental health challenges far more than ever before. And we know that we have been understaffed in mental health. And so it certainly makes sense that we would be increasing that rather than trying to stay status quo.
We're talking about school funding, K-12 funding, with State Superintendent Jill Underley as budget deliberations heat up at the Capitol. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Superintendent Underley, let's turn to special education. Governor Evers' budget plan would set aside over $1 billion to cover eventually 60% of special education funding. Why are you advocating for more special ed dollars by the state?
Yeah, so the governor's proposal actually improved on the proposal that the department had provided him in our ask. And the reason that we're both, behind this is because our schools currently only get reimbursed around 30%. And that's 30 cents on the dollar for every dollar spent on special education. And special education is one of those funds that we have to make sure that we can't carry a deficit in. So we have to transfer money from other programs. You know, it could be, you know, general education, it could be gift funds, whatever it is, but we can't carry a deficit. So we transfer and borrow from like our other funds, like facilities, you know, improving a roof or, you know, adding on to a classroom or technology in order to make that whole. And it has been stagnant. You know, Wisconsin hasn't been reimbursing schools for these services. And so our schools have been struggling. You see, for example, the number of referendum just for operational costs that is part in that is due in part because of the low reimbursement of special education.
You're stating that, you know, school referendums, a number of those on ballots, the ballot questions coming again and again, that has an impact on special education funding.
Absolutely, because when we only get reimbursed 30%, that 70% has to come, that difference has to come from other funds, mm-hmm. other things that we would have spent money on. So when schools delay, you know, putting a roof on the school because it's, you know, needing to be improved or improving a playground or adding on to the science labs in the high school, they have to make these choices because we have to make sure that that fund is not carrying a deficit at the end of the day. And so schools have to then go ask the community, you know, for these other projects that they've had to defer. We have to get into the mindset that special education is so many things. You know, it is all kids. I mean, kids who receive speech and language help, occupational therapy help, as well as additional time and assistance in the classroom. And we can't treat kids differently. And so anyhow, the long and short of it is our schools have to make up the difference someplace. And so they have to, you know, they're unfortunately having to make these choices on what can be deferred or what they can, you know, address later.
What about the staffing of special education teachers? The National Association of State Directors of Special Education says special ed faces a crisis level shortage of teachers. Would additional state funding address recruitment and retention challenges?
Oh, well, absolutely, because when we increase the rate of special education reimbursement, that's actual revenue that the schools will be able to hang on to in their regular budget. They could use that, you know, for recruitment strategies. They could use that to increase teacher pay. They could use that to add, you know, staff. You know, we look at individuals who assist teachers, like teachers' aides. You know, they certainly are not paid as well as we would like either. And so, you know, in a competitive job market, we need to make sure that we're able to deploy these strategies that will help, you know, attract and retain people into the profession. But special education, certainly there's a shortage, crisis level, as you said, but all, you know, all positions in education right now are struggling with recruitment.
Beth from Milton called in, is a teacher and advocate for universal free lunch, and wonders, is universal free lunch a possibility in this budget cycle?
I certainly hope so. I think it makes complete sense. You look at other states that were able to pass that following the COVID emergency relief funds when we had provided free breakfast and lunch to all kids. Breakfast and lunch, making sure kids have food in their bellies helps them focus on learning. You know, there's so many things that show that they have better behavior, better attention, better focus. They're ready to learn. It also eliminates that stigma between the kids who can pay, you know, whose families are able to provide them lunch or, you know, and those who can't. And teachers are really behind this, school administrators. It makes total sense. Excuse me, we provide transportation to school to kids, you know, we provide busing. We don't base it on whether they can pay, you know, for a bus or not. We provide textbooks for kids and other learning materials. And we, again, don't ask them if their families can afford it or not. It's part of our responsibility as a society to provide a public education for all kids. And so it makes total sense that we start with the lunch and food and making sure kids are ready to learn.
Jill Enderle is State Superintendent of Public Instruction in Wisconsin with us on education funding priorities for the two-year budget. Call in throughout the conversation on state politics and K-12 schools. The number to call with your question, 800-642-1234. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In coming weeks, the state's Budget Writing Committee Joint Finance will put together a spending plan from the base budget. K-12 schools, a major piece of that. We're in conversation with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Enderle on K-12 spending priorities and reaction to the legislature's work thus far. Join in at any point. Call with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Superintendent Enderle, you bring up the wave of local school referendums and going to voters. On Thursday, the Wisconsin Policy Forum had reported school referendums this year were approved at the lowest rate since 2010. What do you make of those findings, those results?
Well, I think, you know, the thing about it is costs are up, right, for everything we do. I mean, you look at wages, you look at prices at the store, you look at, I mean, inflation has been really high comparatively. The consumer price index right now, I think, is around 7% for the month of July coming up. And so school districts are grappling with those costs. And the way that it should work is that, I mean, education has been the largest, one of the largest pieces of the state budget. And when the state isn't putting as much in or keeping up with those inflationary costs, school districts have to make up the difference somehow. And so then they have to ask voters to pass a referendum. And I think voters locally, you know, they're paying, you know, their own bills, and maybe, you know, there's, you know, situations are different there too, but there's less appetite, I think, for this increase in local taxes when inflation and consumer price index has gone up. And it's unfortunate, right? I mean, we also are struggling with so many different things, you know, with costs and, you know, getting somebody to come out and, you know, bid on a roof or an HVAC system. I mean, those prices have gone up and they just continue to go up. And so our schools are grappling with that. And they're having a harder time convincing their community to support these tax increases.
Meanwhile, the state is sitting on this projected $7 billion surplus. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is urging caution about tapping that for ongoing expenses or new programs, because who knows what happens down the road with an economic downturn, for instance. How do you think lawmakers should approach using the surplus?
You know, I wish they would put it back into the schools. I mean, when you look at the previous budget, you know, 21 to 2023, you know, they didn't give the schools their increase, you know, that buy-in in because they said, oh, you have got federal dollars, you know, and you can use the federal dollars. So, you know, it's really that the schools have so many needs. We have this massive surplus. If we could use it to help schools get caught up at the very least to where they should be, you know, we could use it certainly also to redefine our school funding formula, make it more equitable, put, you know, index it so that schools get an increase, you know, based on inflation. There's so many things. When we had our Blue Ribbon Commission under previous Governor Scott Walker, and in 2019, they gave out their report. And the Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding indicated that if we're going to fix how we fund our schools, we need a massive infusion of funds. And then lo and behold, oh my goodness, here we are in 2023 and we have this massive amount in a budget surplus. It could solve so many problems. And I understand, saving for a rainy day and whatnot, but you also have to understand that when you have the money, you should get the things done that need to be done.
But the pushback we hear from some GOP leaders is throwing money at the problem. They're concerned that there's still mediocre test results. Kids still can't read. How do you reconcile with that?
I'm really just that I'm so tired of that argument. Our kids can read. Okay. It's when you look at our schools, they're doing a wonderful job educating every kid. A standardized test is a snapshot in time. I think that it's really an argument that shouldn't carry any further water. And the bottom line also is that in order to get, the best reading teachers in front of our kids in order to make sure that they have the strongest curriculum, all of that costs money. And our legislature has never put money towards literacy. They have had, unfunded mandates before about what our school should be doing, to, whatever it is you want to talk about, but they don't put any money behind it. And our schools need that revenue if they're going to hire staff, if they're going to train staff on curriculum resources for literacy. And our kids are doing fine. They can read, they graduate from high school, they go off and they do wonderful things. And I just am really tired of that narrative that our kids can't read because it's simply not true.
We're talking about school funding in the next budget with State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underley is here. You can join in the conversation. Add your question at 800-642-1234. Republicans control the legislature and, as you know, the influential budget writing committee that is doing the work of writing the next 2-year budget. What are you trying to emphasize in your meetings with Republican lawmakers?
I think there's a lot of common ground, and that's what I'm really, hopeful about. I know that they know that our schools need the funding. They see that our schools are struggling to attract and retain teachers. They know that our communities are having a harder time passing referendum. There's also a lot of agreement on literacy and literacy instruction and how we can fund that better. The mental health piece, of course, I'm sad that that was taken out, but I am certainly hopeful that maybe they can replace it with another way to make sure that our kids are getting the services that they need, so that they can grow up and be healthy, productive Wisconsinites and make the state even better than it is right now. And so I am hopeful. I really am. I mean, we have this tremendous opportunity with the surplus, but they certainly can leave a positive legacy as a legislature, one that we won't forget in our lifetime if they're able to make a difference in public education today.
Let's turn to private schools. Governor Evers' budget proposal would put a freeze on new enrollments in the state's private school voucher program and private school special needs scholarship program. Why cap the number of private schools receiving state aid through parental vouchers?
Well, I think we certainly are at a moment where public schools are at a tipping point because that's where our focus should be. Our legislature is struggling to figure out how they want to fund one school system, one public school system. So we certainly shouldn't be adding, another school system that they have to fund. When you think about it, we serve 850,000 plus children in our public schools. That's where the focus should be. There was also a recent article about exclusion of students, LGBTQ plus students, and students with disabilities by choice schools. And so I certainly just want to make sure that our taxpayers who, they're the ones that are funding the schools, our tax dollars should be going to our public schools because they serve every kid and they meet the needs of every kid.
Quick follow-up here, short on time. Sarah from Viroqua wants to know if public schools are being billed for the cost of vouchers.
Yes, it depends. Honestly, it's a long answer to a question. But our public dollars, you think about it, they allocate it for public education and or education in general. And that amount hasn't really gone up. And so in order to fund vouchers, it comes out of the money that we are supposed to be funding public schools. So every community feels it. It'll just vary based on community.
Superintendent Underlee, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. This was really great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jill Underlee is State Superintendent of Public Instruction in Wisconsin, elected to the role in April of 2021. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get an update now on our state's child care staffing crisis and proposals in the upcoming two-year budget that seek to stabilize the child care industry, making it more accessible for families. Call in with your questions about child care, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Emily Amundson is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. Secretary Amundson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's so nice to be with you this morning.
Well, acknowledging today across the nation, people are holding Day Without Childcare events to advocate for better childcare equity and the workforce wages and affordability. What challenges is Wisconsin facing? What is the picture right now in childcare here?
Absolutely, yeah. And if you're not familiar, a day without childcare, as you mentioned, happening all over the country, but here in Wisconsin, really robust participation across the state. And it's because, frankly, over the past 10 years, we've seen a real precipitous decline in the number of childcare providers we have in the state of Wisconsin. In our state, we've lost about 32% of our programs, and that was even pre-pandemic. It's more difficult for folks to find that high quality care that they're looking for, whether it's in a center or whether it's in family-based care in somebody's home. It's much more difficult to find. If you live in a rural part of the state, chances are you're living in a child care desert, which means that there just simply aren't enough spaces for working families who need them. And that, coupled with the fact that there are far fewer folks coming into the profession because of historically low wages, benefits that sometimes just aren't even there. We see a lot of folks really grappling with the question of whether they close up shop and, frankly, whether they leave the profession altogether. And so a day like today, a day without childcare, is a day to bring that whole puzzle out into the general public, into the general conversation. And what I would say to folks who are at work today is ask folks with young kids, what would you do if your childcare provider closed down? What would you do if you got a notice saying that that you've got 2 weeks to find alternate arrangements? Would it mean that you would have to find substandard care for your child? Would it mean you would have to leave the workforce altogether? These are questions that, frankly, Wisconsin families are grappling with daily at this point.
Those are really tough questions. And when you look at that 32% drop in centers, I wonder, what is the situation like with waiting lists now?
Waiting lists in every area of the state are miles long. I've heard stories from mothers and prospective parents in every part of the state that say that they are planning pregnancies and births around years to come open slots at childcare centers. So obviously something needs to change if we are going to solve through this for working parents. The picture improves ever so slightly in the 3 to 5 age range, but it's those infant and toddler spots that are highly precious resources. And that's exacerbated when I travel the state. There are world-class centers, and they tour me through a center, and then they show me the two rooms with the lights turned off because they're not able to find available staff to work in those classrooms. So not only do people want to come into these centers and the waiting lists are a mile long, but that waiting list is exacerbated by the fact that we have a staffing crisis and we're not able to actually get the lights on in those rooms to get parents off the waiting list.
But wasn't the federal pandemic aid, the federal pandemic relief supposed to stabilize that situation, supposed to be able to help retain staff and provide raises and retention bonuses? What happened there?
Absolutely. So yes, we were fortunate, just like every other state in the country, to receive pandemic aid, stabilization aid in the form of ARPA dollars, federal ARPA dollars. And we, as a state, collectively put over $356 million into a program called Child Care Counts. And that was intended to do exactly as you said, to stabilize the industry and to ensure that we don't have centers closing because they can't keep the lights on. Structured around two different programs, one to really focus on ensuring that high quality care continues, the other part of the program really to continue investing in our workforce, investing in bonuses or raises for staff. Now, the good news about the Child Care Counts program in the state of Wisconsin is the program did exactly what it was designed to do, which was stabilize the industry. So slot for slot, we don't see any change in the amount of capacity that we had pre-pandemic. Unfortunately, as I sort of
Can you explain that a little bit more, slot for slot, what you're seeing there?
So across the state, we have not seen a decline in the number of slots that we had pre-pandemic. Oh. So the program stabilized the current landscape. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, the current landscape pre-pandemic was not adequate for working families. And I think that what the pandemic did is laid bare the issues that families have been struggling with for the last 10 years, which is just there aren't enough, there isn't enough child care available in their communities for the number of working families there are. And the care that does exist is too expensive. And we've got workforce challenges that are keeping folks out of this profession because it's such a historically low paid sector.
So Governor Tony Evers wanting to continue the stabilization of child care counts in the state budget. I'm just wondering what happens if that program does sunset in December?
Well, we would be bracing for an absolutely terrible fiscal cliff. It would really take what has been the lifeline for a lot of providers across the state and rip out that piece of their funding stream. We have lots of data that shows that that centers across our state, family providers, this is about a quarter to a third of their current revenue stream.
Third of their revenue stream. That's significant.
It's absolutely significant. And and that's different from provider to provider. But I think what you're seeing, we've seen a lot of surveys out there already asking providers, what will you do with this funding if this funding does sunset at the end of the ARPA stabilization? And folks say, well, we would be forced to raise rates probably somewhere in the neighborhood of, 30 to 50%, I've seen. We've also seen a lot of folks talking about just closing up shop altogether. And our data shows that about 60% of centers would grapple with that rate increase on families that already feel like they're paying too much. And another 32% would seriously consider closing their doors.
talking about childcare in Wisconsin with Emily Amundson, head of the State Department of Children and Families. You can join in the conversation. Add your question at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Amundson, you touched on this a little bit, but, you know, family planning. Last month, the Northeastern Wisconsin News Collaboration, they reported families in the region are planning pregnancies around the availability of childcare, and that's resulting in smaller families. How else is limited access to childcare affecting communities?
Yeah, thanks for that question. This is something that has just been highlighted over and over in the state that, you know, this is a famous story from over in Western Wisconsin, where there was a doctor with four children under the age of five that was that had accepted a position, was going to move and work in a hospital over in rural Western Wisconsin. And when this family discovered that there wasn't available care, they pulled out of the contract and they ultimately never came to the state. And it's stories like that. It's the stories of families that are looking at wanting to settle, move to small towns across the state, but it's that lack of available infrastructure, childcare, transportation, housing that keeps families from making that decision. You know, we're a declining state here in terms of the number of folks, in terms of the number of births and families. And I think it's the small towns across Wisconsin that stand to lose in this deal if we can't build those infrastructure pieces that attract families back to small towns. On top of that, we've got a workforce challenge across the state. We've got on average, you know, two open positions for every applicant, for every willing, working, seeking job seeker. And we really can't afford, if there are folks out there that want to work, then we've got to get them into the workforce. And I understand that every family is different. There may be families that are actively making the choice to have a parent stay at home with kids, and that's a fantastic choice to make. But for those folks who feel like they can't make any other choice but to keep somebody home, I talk to a lot of moms, frankly, who they want to be working, and then they crunch the numbers and they realize if that childcare cost goes up even by 10%, 20%, it just doesn't make sense to keep that parent working. And that's the what we're leaving on the table as a state from an economic perspective when we're not investing in childcare. And I think increasingly businesses are waking up to this idea.
More data there on the cost of tuition. Economic Policy Institute estimates a year of infant care can cost Wisconsinites more than $12,500. You mentioned Child Care Counts program. That federal aid has been, you know, keeping the tuition from soaring. How could child care be made more affordable when, you know, you could potentially predict 30 to 50% increases in tuition?
Sure. So I think that's where the long-term benefit. So if what I've heard from a lot of providers across the state is what's keeping providers from you know, making the raises to their staff permanent, mm-hmm. is the idea that this program could sunset with the ARPA dollars. So if we were able to forecast for our providers that this funding is in statute, it's GPR funding, and it's permanent, and it's going to be part of their economic picture long term, mm-hmm. they will make different decisions with this funding. They will be able to grow. They will be able to add on. They will be able to give staff those benefits packages that are so highly sought after and those long-term raises. And I think what we'll see is much more confidence in growing the system than we do when this is just simply a relief program.
Emily Amundson, Secretary of the State Department of Children and Families, call in with a question. Share about your child care situation, your experience. Call anytime through the discussion. The number is 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss Wisconsin's child care system as the state's two-year budget comes together. We have the head of the state agency responsible for licensing and monitoring child care centers in the state, Department of Children and Family Secretary Emily Amundson, is here. Colin, with your question, your thoughts on child care in Wisconsin, the number to call, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Amundson, I'm going to play some tape here. The head of a child care program in western Wisconsin partially linked the financial challenges that centers are experiencing to the growth of 4K programs in the state. And here is Renee Ersting on PBS Wisconsin, and Renee is with Child Care Partnership.
You're not making any money with infant and toddler care. The ratios, which I don't want changed, are a 4-to-1. And so 4 infants to 1 adult. So you're sustaining your business, but you're not making any money. You're really looking at the amount of money that's coming in on 4-year-olds or 3 or 4-year-olds, because you can have over 20 of them in, you know, per teacher.
What is your response there? Do state regulations or funding for childcare need adjusting after the growth of 4K in public schools?
Yeah, I think this is a long-term conversation between our department and our friends over at the Department of Public Instruction, and certainly these two communities. It's a wonderful benefit that we have in the state of Wisconsin to have 4K as part of most, if not all, school districts across the state. But it has undoubtedly played a role in that decline that I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, that 32% decline. It has had a destabilizing effect in the ultimate bottom line of a center because of the ratios that the provider mentioned. It's just the way that industry had made the numbers work. And so what it's frankly asking of us, I think, as policymakers, is to really create that kind of relationship, that GPR relationship, general purpose revenue relationship, that we have on the K-12 side. We don't invest any state dollars in childcare. And so I think that's the new conversation. That's really what Governor Evers is looking at with this budget proposal, is to really start to say, we need to look at childcare the way that we look at public school, and that's as a public good, as a piece of infrastructure.
But just a bit of nuance here, the state curriculum for 4K is offered through some childcare centers. Don't the dollars follow the child in that situation?
So yes, they do, but it's because 4K is a part-time program.
Mm-hmm.
Those dollars flow on a part-time basis. And so that, a lot of centers are able to sort of build around and buoy around that state funding. But some are not able to do that. Because of the fact that a lot of school districts have ultimately made the decision to retain the 4K program as part of the school district, they haven't created that partnership with child care centers. And so there are a lot of child care centers out there that do not have that that relationship to the school district.
Okay. Heard from Claire in Eau Claire, emailed and says that they're a woman in their 30s, and Claire has found many of their friends are choosing not to have children due to the cost. What is your reaction to that?
Unfortunately, I have heard that too many times to be surprised. And I just, I remember my own family planning when I was in my early 30s. And it was a conversation that I had with centers in the greater Madison area to find out where I would be on the wait list to even start that conversation around family planning. And that's a new circumstance, I would say, for young families in our state. And it's an unfortunate byproduct of, I think, the state that we're in.
Talking about childcare with Emily Amundson, head of the State Department of Children and Families, you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I want to turn to the role of businesses, business and industry here. I mean, the governor urging $22 million for the Partner Up program and says the program has helped more than 200 employers partner with childcare providers to make care more affordable for their staff. For their employees. Why should state tax dollars be subsidizing the childcare of Wisconsin employers?
Well, I think, again, it comes back to that that question of, is childcare part of the infrastructure that we ought to build if we want to increase local economies? And I think that what provider or what businesses across the state are saying is, we want to be part of solving through this challenge that we hear our employees are having. We just need a way to start. We need a better understanding of how we can help. And I've had a lot of conversations with the employers who, you know, they jump right to the idea of, oh, we better open a center on site. Well, that's about the most difficult thing that you can do. What we're urging employers to start with is, why don't you start by treating this as part of your family-friendly package? You know, there are employers across the state who win awards for being family friendly. Let childcare be part of that family friendly package. And so this is intended to be kind of an on-ramp into thinking about childcare as part of that package. You know, as this program continues, the employer would pick up more of the cost of care, the state would pick up less of the cost of care, but it gives employers a way to start helping.
Do you see any momentum from employers in this direction? Are businesses starting to do this thing that is making it more supportive, putting more of those businesses' resources into helping to fund their workers' childcare needs?
Absolutely. I was just at a manufacturing company up in the Stevens Point area, and they said, you know, we've got three manufacturing companies on this block that are all competing for the same talent, and yet we are noted as a family-friendly business, and that means they offer childcare benefit. They've got an on-site clinic. And they're really asking their employees, what can we do to be more family friendly? They win, they said, 9 times out of 10 in the competition for high quality talent because of that family friendly policy. And I think when businesses get on board with family friendly policies, they're going to win in the competition for employees.
Secretary Amundson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Emily Amundson is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.